grow in that knowledge ourselves, we actually are able to transfer to other individuals for our greater understanding of everything that is we work on and touch. Well, going out and taking these folks that only had the theory, okay, adding the theory I have plus my practical, allows you to see, once you're out in the field, the house that you saw on paper that you just got that appraisal order for might have any number of different nuances to it that affect how you apply the value. And that's the practical side. So I can give just a simple example. All right. You get an appraisal order. It's for a single family home in a brand new subdivision. No one's lived this home. It's under contract. You have all the comps you could ever possibly want right there in the subdivision. You have to go drive around. The data is going to hit you right smack in the face. So you go to your subject property, you pull up, you start walking around, and you look at the size, look at the drive. It's the same as 20 other homes that have the exact same footprint, diagram, everything. I mean, the bathroom's in the same place, the garage's in the same place. Then you walk around the back of the house.
You're listening to the Appraiser Secrets Podcast with your host, Mark Jackson. You will get straightforward advice for how to make a profit on every new transaction that you do, compounding your net worth and growing your wealth substantially all through real estate. Get more information at appraisersecrets.com.
Welcome, everyone, to the Appraiser Secrets Podcast, powered by Investor Comps. I am Tim Wenders, and I have Mark, you can call him MJ Jackson, on the line. How are you today, Mark?
Doing absolutely positively wonderful, Tim. This is going to be a great time to have an opportunity to care and share with the listeners today.
Yes, absolutely. At the time of this recording, I can see that you're still in your office in Denver currently.
Yep.
Just outside of Denver, up in the upper room that we like to call it.
Yes, indeed.
And I have to put forth a little disclaimer from the RV. I am on the coast of, I'm on the shores of the Rogue River somewhere in Oregon. Mm-hmm. And so, like we were talking earlier, if you hear birds chirping and all in the background, it's because I'm out amongst nature. So,
nature. It's a beautiful thing, man. It's a beautiful thing.
Anyway, I want to welcome everyone. Thank you for joining us. Today, we have a very fun topic. We're going to be talking about theory versus practical real estate. And we're going to break it down. We're really going to dive into each one of them. And then stay tuned to the end, because what we're really going to do at the end is give you the answer to what you really need to do. In other words, how do you balance those two? And we're going to give you very specific steps on what to do with that. But again, we thank you for joining us on this podcast. Please share it. Please rate it. Please give us feedback and comments. We welcome that. So having said all that, we're going to dive right in. Again, we're talking about theory versus practical real estate. And the first thing I'm going to do, Mark, is I'm going to ask you, as a well-trained real estate expert, to talk to us about the theory of real estate. And I'm going to let you go for a while. I'm going to stop and ask a couple of questions. But tell us about the theory of real estate.
I'll take it even a step further back than that. I go back to the idea of the theoretical application of appraising. When a bright light went off and said, I can do something else other than work in a corporate world, and went to appraisal school with the hope and desire of becoming an entrepreneur and eventually being an appraiser or opening a firm, so on and so forth. In that classroom setting, we actually spent a wealth of time diving into the theory that is real estate appraisal. This idea that you're establishing a value for a moment in time. Something can change from one day to the next on a piece of real estate, land, conditioning, single family dwelling, whatever the case may be, that changes that value. So we're doing it for a moment in time. But overwhelmingly, the things that we looked at, the different types of foundation, from slab to crawl space to basement, and what that meant not only to the structure of the home but also to the overall application of value to that piece of real estate, there were any number of different books, theories, case studies that we did in the classroom. Now, I was fortunate to go to a school that actually took us out in the field as well. So in addition to doing the book work, we actually got a chance to pull out a tape measure and measure the exterior dwelling of a house, draw out the actual framework of the dwelling, things of that nature. We got to see different lots and how homes were positioned on those properties. So there was a measure of some practical application of appraising to as solely as it relates to the single family residence and maybe some of the comparables, but mm-hmm. we didn't get a chance to do that. And I mean, I look at something like this, you know, we all go to school, we got a lot of books, and I have a wealth of data that I still reference from time to time on appraising. This is The Appraisal of Real Estate, one of the theory books that
we Those things are big, man. How many pages of books? Yeah, hold them up, man.
That one's a thick one. This is another one. This is Appraising Residential Property. So that one's pretty good. I mean, these are hardbound copies, I'm telling you. And they do serve me well. One of the things that I want to bring out for this particular conversation, because we'll be able to take it forward, this is the Dictionary of Real Estate Appraisal. So there's any number of different terms that we use in real estate. It relates to the physical dwelling, as it relates to the land use, the different municipalities that have zoning offices and that nature, even as it relates to finance. Here's a good one, the mortgage coefficient, and how we actually apply that to the gross rent multiplier when we're doing income application. Yeah. All that's the stuff that takes place on paper. But even when it comes to rent application, or in particular, these dynamics as it relates to a single family residence, when you go out to the site, that's the actual practical. When I was appraising, I actually had a book of business that was a little bit bigger than I could handle. And through relationships, I had some friends that were actually now going to appraisal school who also had friends that were going mm-hmm. to appraisal school. Now, for them, they were going to a different facility that just taught the book knowledge. They had never been out with a camera, with a tape measure, and driven and actually measured property. So I had a little bit different skill set on the practical side, okay, actually touching houses as compared to only being in a classroom for 90 hours. As a result, over time, it allowed me to teach. And we know overwhelming, anytime when we're teaching, not only do we solidify the knowledge for ourselves, growing that knowledge ourselves, we actually are able to transfer to other individuals for our greater understanding of everything that is we work on and touch. Well, going out and taking these folks that only had the theory, okay, adding the theory I have plus my practical, allows you to see once you're out in the field, the house that you saw on paper that you just got that appraisal order for might have any number of different nuances to it that affect how you apply the value. And that's the practical side. So I can give just a simple example. All right. You get an appraisal order. It's for a single family home in a brand new subdivision. No one's lived this home. It's under contract. You have all the comps you could ever possibly want right there in the subdivision. You have to go drive around. The data is going to hit you right smack in the face. So you go to your subject property, you pull up, you start walking around, and you look at the size, look at the drive. It's the same as 20 other homes that had the exact same footprint, diagram, everything. I mean, the bathroom's in the same place, the garage in the same place. Then you walk around the back of the house, and you find that this one, I'm just using a visual example from Metro Atlanta. Metro Atlanta is an area that's sitting in the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains. And so it's got rolling, all kinds of different topography. It is nowhere near flat, okay? I walk around this property, and what do I find? I find that it has literally no backyard that is level. Now, it's got another 75, 80 feet of backyard, but it's all on a 14% grade going straight downhill. There's a fence around it, and right behind it is a detention pond, because that's the detention pond is what holds the water management for all the impervious surface. See, that's one of those words that come out of the book, impervious surface. Okay.
Impervious. Well, it's a few words. You've used coefficient, impervious. You've actually used some theoretical words already that are probably some people going, oh, my goodness. But anyway, keep going.
So visually, what I'm saying is, you've got the same cookie cutter house that's throughout the entire subdivision, but mm-hmm. unlike the other ones that have a backyard, have a front yard, this mm-hmm. one's sitting on the land. It's got a serious 14% grade of the backyard that just goes down, which is not usable. You're not going back there and putting up a play set, or you're not going to have the capacity to drop in a above ground or in ground pool of any kind. And then visually for your view, okay, you look out your back window and you're looking at a detention pond that even sits lower than that. All it is either going to be dry bed in the event that there's enough runoff water to go fill it up, and it's just going to grow up with grass like that, or in some occasions, it might have a little bit of water or mud or whatever case in it. So now you've got to take and actually come up with and essentially educe how you're going to evaluate the contract that's been written on this property, the other comparables that aren't going to have this same characteristic to it. That's the actual practical side of doing real estate and applying valuation to a deal that either you're looking at or that someone else has brought to you. And it's not until you actually get out there, go look at that deal. I mean, I always use the phrase, before you put the key in ignition, you want to smell money. Well, based on the numbers on this deal, what you're actually getting for it, what the value is, you have smelt money. But now you got to determine if that money still smells sweet based on the property that you're dealing with. And you only get to do that when you take action, actually get out in the field and act on a lead that has come to your desk.
Sure. So tell me, because I'm sure you went to school with a lot of people that were maybe good with theory, but maybe you were a little bit weak when it came to going out in the field, or maybe even vice versa. What are some observations that you have about, you know, one of the things that people that maybe don't do as well in school in is they joke about people that are book smart but not practical smart, you know, theory smart. So tell me some observations you have about people that are theory smart but not necessarily out in the field proficient. Give some examples, or maybe even, I mean, because you've obviously been able to marry the two very well, and we're going to talk more about that towards the tail end of the podcast, but sure. But just some observations about that. Let me give you that topic.
Well, and it comes twofold. And in most cases, especially on the appraisal side and then even in the real estate deal side, it really winds up showing up when the review appraisal comes in. When you had an appraiser go out that basically has applied their theory, their in-class knowledge, they've gotten their appraisal license, they've gone out, they're getting appraisal work, so they've got an order that comes in, they're doing their background analysis, they're going online, or in some municipalities, they've actually had to go to courthouse, they've pulled up the subject property data, they've now have some comparables that have actually sold within a certain proximity and a certain time frame around that subject property, or they may even have gone the extra step of gotten some listings, some sales that are actually on the market about to sell. So they've got a framework of the value. They'll go out, they'll look at that subject property, see the circumstances that are there, they'll take their picture, do analysis, they'll go right back to their desk, they'll sit down and put the appraisal, it'll go off to the bank, and the bank will have a review appraisal done on it, and the review appraiser says, this person did not take the care and diligence because there's this circumstance. As a matter of fact, even just looking at the maps, given the technology we have with Google Maps and that nature, it's easy to make a determination about a certain location and plot of land that a dwelling is on that doesn't show up anywhere in the notes on the appraisal. So now you have a challenge. And this goes right to the real estate investor. Real estate investor is looking at the data. They see that they're acquiring this property. It's a $200,000 value. It's foreclosed on. They're getting a discount. And they see that they can acquire this property for about $130,000, maybe do a little bit of work to it. And then they'll be able to garner that $200,000 value. The challenge is, because of location and the circumstances with that particular property, two things are going to happen. One, the value is not going to be the whole $200,000 because it's an inferior location. And the second thing is, the second thing that's going to come up is that they're going to be on market so much longer because it's not a desirable property at the prices listed at. And that's going to really impact that investor because overwhelmingly, they're, if they're really looking at the deal, they're actually analyzing how long the houses in the area are on market, how long they're going to wait before they go into contract. If, in fact, there's someone that's getting financing, the type of financing that person might be doing, whether doing FHA or conventional, all those things are going to come back and bite us when we're not looking and taking the experience of the practical work that happens in the field when it happens and comes to a piece of real estate that we're investing in versus just the classroom, stay in the lane, it's in a box, and you're treating every unit like itself. Because it is easy to do in the circumstance we're talking about when you've got seven floor plans or sets of plans for property. Those seven plans are throughout the dwelling. They might change the color, maybe change the stack stone versus the brick. Maybe they'll have all brick on the front. Maybe they'll have three sides of brick, depending on the desires of the different spec homes that are built in that neighborhood. And so those are little nuances that will impact the value. But that location and what it means to an investor when they're trying to turn that deal quickly and certainly know that it's going to appraise right so that they can move it and recognize and harvest those resources and then go do another deal, overwhelmingly the practical side, someone that actually understands how that location will impact the profitability of that transaction is invaluable, and you can't put a value on it versus just what you get on the theory side.
Yeah, so here's something, and let's maybe have a conversation geared towards the investor that may not have an appraiser background. And this investor wants to go out and start doing deals, may not have a lot of the theory. So they're heavier on the going out and doing it side.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So talk about, number one, some ways that they could not, you know, get burned, mess themselves up because they don't have theory. Maybe some ways that they could get some theory without reading those books you just held up that are way too big for most people. But not getting too bogged down with that theory. You know what I'm saying? So talk to that. So the people we're talking to right now, let me clarify, these are real estate investors or people that are buying real estate or interested in real estate that may not have the appraiser theory training and background. Okay, go.
And so in this situation, I think we talked a little bit about getting training and actually applying it for your real estate investing. And so that's important. Again, you don't want to be going to training after training after training and not applying the knowledge. Get a couple of different courses, seminars under your belt. I highly recommend taking Evaluation First Approach. Shameless bribe here. Use your investor comps. There's on-demand training there that will remove the burden of having to actually become, you know, 101 or 102 type trained or 201 type trained appraiser, okay? But pay attention to the details when you go out to the site. You want to be in a situation where those properties that you look at, that you engage with, are or have similar characteristics, both with the physical dwelling and with the lot that it sits on, the location, as the subject property versus the comparables. That way you'll know you're in good position. I mean, granted, square footage is going to change and adjust from house to house. Some of the curbside characteristics are going to change from property. Those things, as long as they're in reasonably good proximity to each other, not a mile away, but, you know, within a quarter mile, within the same neighborhood, those are going to be good things that you can rely on, okay, to actually compare subject property comparable to know that that value you're looking for is going to be consistent. But overwhelmingly, don't allow someone else to tell you what the value is. Don't allow someone else to tell you what you should be looking at on a practical side or application for a property, because those wholesalers, those other marketers of the deals they're trying to sell to you, it, obviously it's going to be the best deal, the largest margin you possibly can earn, so on and so forth. Allow yourselves to take a valuation first approach. Use Investor Comps and our on-demand train to guide you through being well aware of what you're experiencing on the practical side when you're actually out there looking at the property. Anything you can't figure out, just come back and ask us. We've got a great support desk. We can help you with that. But again, core elements, square footage, year build, room counts, lot size, and similar locations or conditions on those lots are going to be those core things that are going to help you look at that property from a practical application as compared to just being willy-nilly or not having any theory to apply to it.
Okay, good. So what here's what I got. Let me tell you what jumped out at me. Something you said towards the tail end was to take ownership. Do not allow something that comes across your desk where someone says, this is, you could buy it for this, the ARV is this, and you know, we've all seen those, and then people go off and they immediately start repeating that that's the after repair value, whatever. Right. Now, if you build a relationship with someone, maybe you have a little more confidence, but I think the term a lot of us use is trust but verify. You know, yes. You want to trust them, but you want to go out and verify. That's kind of what I heard you say. And then I like those core elements that you gave to look at there. But then I think the tool, I mean, for those that aren't aware that are listening to this podcast, you know, Investor Comps has a lot of these tools available for the investor. They have all the tools really for the investor to get that information. So, there's nothing shameless about that plug. It's a plug. We're going to let people know that that's available and it's out there. I'm keeping an eye on our time here. I think we're doing pretty good here. So, yes. All right. So we've talked about the investor that might be out there working on things. We've talked some about theory and maybe how people can get bogged down with that. For the last few minutes here, Mark, let's kind of bring them two together and let's talk about a formula for success. In other words, how do you marry theory and practical and do it consistently long-term and do well with it?
Well, Tim, you know, the thing about becoming an investor, we all come at from different walks. There's certain impetus from it. We're in different market areas across the country. I often reference this idea that you want to have a certain affinity for the market area that you're investing in, whether it's somewhere you grew up, where it's where you now live, maybe it's where you went to college. It might be somewhere where you visited with a sibling or an aunt or a grandparent, and there's something about that market area that just kind of perks your interest. You think that you could do well there because of the different characteristics of the market area. So this is, that's more of the, it's not so much the, it is theory because you got to start somewhere, okay? And then you start having conversation or getting some knowledge about the type of investing you want to do. Because valuation comes into play whether you're being a lender, whether you're the rehabber, whether you're the wholesaler, whether you're actually buying the property to own it long-term as a wealth building unit, or if you're going to flip that property, if you're going to buy it, fix it up, and resell it for a property, you know, somewhere between 6 to 12 months. So,
even tax liens or notes or any of that kind of stuff.
All that plays into the valuation side as well as what is going to be the idea of the type of investing that you're going to do. Then you get a little bit of education, okay, and then you transition to the actual doing of that business in real estate. And be mindful. I just started re-listening to this book I want to share with everybody, The E-Myth by Michael Gerber, E-Myth by Michael Gerber, but he did a subsequent version called The E-Myth Revisited. And in here, and this really does apply to real estate investors, whether you're a novice or you've been at it for a little bit or just getting started. And this idea of the theory part of real estate investing and the practical side, because you're starting a business And yes, you want, maybe you're trying to create some more income. Maybe you're trying to get away from the J-O-B, just above, just over broke, I think is one of those categories referred to it. But you want to get beyond going in and doing real estate as a means of ways to create other income and finding out all you've done is create another job. So I recommend reading that book because it gives you a framework of actually how you want to go about transferring your idea, your concept, your theory that you want to be in a real estate investor and start putting it to practical use. So getting that basic core line knowledge, determining what market area, where do you actually want to do business, choosing that market and how you want to engage there, then defining, okay, what type of investing do I want to do in this market? Am I going to be acquiring properties just to rent? Am I going to be a properties to flip? Can I do both in this market area? Is there a part of that market area that is specific? All they want to do is rent. And then there's another little part of that same county, city, municipality that actually is an up-and-coming market, and people are moving there because of the schools. They're moving there because of the commercial activity, the different shopping and stuff that's being developed. And so there's a draw to be in that location. Look at those markets, determine how it is you want to engage that market, and then be ready to move forward with the right tools. Overwhelmingly, having a valuation tool like InvestorComp specifically is going to put you in a excellent position to determine the value that you should buy at, but then also what the actual repair value is of that property. You also want to know who are the buyers and sellers in your market area, okay? Is it just an area where Tim is selling to MJ and MJ is selling to Tim in a variety of transactions, or are banks actually releasing property and selling it to an LLC? Is an LLC that actually acquired a property from a bank and now is remarketing it to a homeowner? You want to see who those buyers and sellers are using investor comps, allowing you to apply these different little appraiser secrets so that you can actually be more on the practical side of applying and doing real estate than just the theory side, actually taking action, touching the different lead sources that are coming your way, analyzing them to see how profitable you actually can be as you set up your entrepreneurial endeavor to be a real estate investor. Those are some of the core things to put in place and touch so that you can overwhelmingly be more on the practical side than just the theory. Because I could get into another conversation about how just the theory side can bite you time and time and time again, stripping away all the valuable resources, and that includes money that you put into being a real estate investor that you'll never ever see again if you don't have or utilize the practical side of real estate investing and appraising that we've been talking about in this podcast.
Yeah, so that's probably a cool topic for another day, because it reminds me of sunk costs. It reminds me of people that invest in education. It's a sunk cost, but then they never get ROI. They never get return on it because they don't, you know, break the friction between their backside and the seat that they're in and go out and do something. And, you know, Everything that you listed there, as you were going through a list, and I highly recommend people back this up, listen to it over and over again, because they're probably going to want to write that down. And that is, everything that you said to me was all about doing something, taking action. That sitting around, that if you and I were to just sit around and talk about real estate or appraisal or the theory of it, or, you know, if you value the properties this way, you value them this way. If we talked about it for the next 10 years, how much money would we make?
We ain't going very far based on talking about it, that's for sure.
Yeah. So we're talking about, so what we're seeing is, and we're coming up against our buzzer here where we need to jump off, is that we know that you've got to take information, go out. You know, I want to go back to something you said earlier and kind of remind people of this. There are basically three things. You learn about something, then you go use it, and then you also can teach it. And that was very valuable, I believe. Mm-hmm. I think that people have been in learning mode. They need to go out and start using it. That's how you make the jump from theory, right, to practical. And then I agree with you. You really internalize these things when you start teaching it like you're doing right now. That's when you get to the point where it's internalized and you are ready to go with it. And that that may be something that some of the people that are listening in say, you know what, I eventually want to do what MJ's doing. I want to talk to other people about this. Well, you know what? You need to start doing. Don't go from learning to talking about it. You got to get out there and do it, right?
Yep. You know, it's interesting. Just before we get ready to wrap up some stuff, and definitely folks leave comments about this, on that idea of getting into some of those awkward positions, we should do a session on deals or duds. We can actually walk through. We could probably do a couple different episodes on that and maybe do two or three different units and talk about the characteristics, everything we analyze into it, and just kind of put out there, is this a deal or a dud? Get some comments going, that type of thing, and then just kind of reveal which one it is. Because surprisingly, what may look like a dud isn't, and what looks like a deal is something you could run from. So we definitely want to look at doing potentially a couple of sessions on deals or duds.
Excellent. Well, I like the thought of it. I wrote that down. I think that's a great teaser for people to want to listen into podcasts coming up. So here we've talked about theory versus practical, and basically we've told people learn some stuff, then go out and use it. Learn stuff, go out and use it. So that's excellent. So, well, listen, folks, we're here at the about the 35-minute mark, I believe. If I'm counting correctly, I may not be, but we like to keep them in that sweet spot so that people can get some information. Once again, I encourage you, if you're listening in, we welcome your feedback. We honor you. We want you to give us some feedback. Let us know how we're doing, some topics you may be interested in, and then to share that. Share this with others, because we know you know people that would be interested in hearing this. So having said all that, MJ, last words, and we'll jump off.
Oh, without a doubt, I definitely, just coming out of this, go ahead and grab a copy of that ebook, E-Myth Revisited, by Michael Gerber. I truly think that you'll enjoy it. As entrepreneurs and getting engaged in real estate, it's a wonderful thing to do. Without a doubt, as we're recording this one, it is springtime. We just celebrated Mother's Day. Go back even on any day of the week. Honor your mom. Tell her how much you love her, that type of thing. And then every day, do something that challenges you. Do something that scares you. It'll only make you stronger.